Parshas Toldos is the beginning of the saga of Yaakov and Esav, the birth of Yaakov and Esav. And the first section of the Parsha, the first Ali of the Parsha, although we will not address all of it, because before the end of the first Aliyah, we move on to talk about the famine where Yitzhak Avinu went down to the land of the Plishtim, whole different subject we'll have to save for another time. The first section of the first Aliyah is the familiar story of everything that went into the birth of the twins of Yaakov and Esav, and the Mechiras HaBechora, the sale of the birthright between Yaakov and Esav. And what I would like to focus on today is a bit of a grounding in the phenomenon of Yaakov and Esav, this unique relationship, this unique pairing of these two twins, Yaakov and Esav. And I want to start with a significant insight, which is found on the first pasuk of our parsha. First pasuk of our parsha seems to have been released by the Department of Redundancy Department. It says, "Ve'ela toldos Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram hayled es Yitzchak." These are the children, the offspring, it seems, of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram gave birth, so to speak, and that's not the male. The male version, Avram brought the birth of Yitzchak. Well, generally speaking, if Yitzchak is the child of Avram, then Avram would be the father of Yitzchak, right? Why does the pasuk have to say, "Ve'ela toldos Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram hayled es Yitzchak"? It's an obvious question. It's a question which all the commentaries discuss, including Rashi. Rashi says, even though it says, "Ela toldos Yitzchak ben Avram," it still has to say, "Avram hayled es Yitzchak," because there were all kinds of skeptics who wondered if really, was Avram really the father of Yitzchak after all? You know, Avram and Sarah had been married for so long and they hadn't had a child, and suddenly they go to Avimelech, and you know, maybe this wasn't really Avram and Sarah's child. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it obvious that Avram hayled es Yitzchak because Yitzchak looked exactly like Avram Avinu. So nobody would have any questions about who he came from, about where he came from. Okay, that's one pshat, Halfi Chazal. Many different interpretations which are found in the Rishayim to explain it. But the Ran, in the Drashos HaRan, has a beautiful pshat, which I would say, if we find it to the classic Meforshim on the page, it relates somewhat to what the Rashbam says. I'll tell you what the Rashbam says, and then we'll graduate to what the Ran says. The Rashbam says, "Lefi she'amar lemala b'Yishmael ben Avram asher yolda Hagar ha-Mitzris." At the end of Parshas Chaye Sarah, last week's Parsha, it goes through the toldos, the children, the offspring, the families of Yishmael. So over there, it refers to Yishmael, who was the son of Avram, that Hagar, the Egyptian maidservant, had born to Avraham. Aval kan Yitzchak ikar ben hoyel Avram, shuhu hoyel es Yitzchak meishtei gemura. So what it says, Avram holid es Yitzchak, it's saying it in contrast to discussion about Yishmael that we had in the last parsha. We talked about Yishmael, and Yishmael is, to some degree, of course, a child of Avram. But when we look at who is Avram's main holada, main tol, the main child, Avram holid es Yitzchak. Ki b'Yitzchak yikorei l'chazor. Remember what Hashem had said to Avram in anticipation of the birth of Yitzchak at the end of Parshas Lech Lecha. Yitzchak is the one who will be known as your child. You have others, biological children, Yishmael, the other B'nai Keturah. Yitzchak is the one who's going to be known as your child. So it comes here in contrast to that. And brings another place where we find in Divrei HaYamim that after it describes the many children of Avram, it comes back and says, Avram hayled, vayelad Avram es Yitzchak. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. So in some sense, that's what the pasuk is saying. Here we're getting to the main story. The Ran turns it a little bit differently. And he says that it doesn't really say, we don't have the expression Ela Toldos is found through almost all the significant personalities of Bereshis but not Avraham. It never says Ela told us Avraham. And the reason he suggests that it doesn't say Ela told us Avraham is because the in the case of Avraham Avinu, not all of its toldos really figure. Yishmael doesn't really figure. However, Ve'ela toldos Yitzchak ben Avraham, when it comes to Yitzchak, the child of Avraham, there everything figures. Yaakov and Esav both figure. What does that mean? Isn't it true that the same way Yishmael is not a Jew, is not considered a child of Avraham, so too Esav is not a Jew? Ki b'Yitzchak ikari l'chazara, b'Yitzchak v'loi kol Yitzchak. Right? That's what we darshan over there. Not only is it Yitzchak, but it's of Yitzchak. Not all of Yitzchak. Esav is not considered the child in the same way, but it's not quite the same way. It's not the same way. Yishmael, number one, was the daughter of Hagar, the son of Hagar, who was the Shifcha of Sarah. Whereas Esav was a twin, was the child of Rivka, just like Yaakov Avinu was. There's a difference. Yishmael was sent away. Esav was not sent away. Yishmael, right, the Gemara's expression, when it speaks about it in Sanhedrin, when the Yishmaelim would come to lay claims in the world court against the Jewish people, it says, Yishmael is like the child that the father wrote him out, right? Wrote, if it's possible to have such a thing, you know, divorced his child, sent away his child. That's what Avraham Avinu did. Hashem told him, right? Goresh, right? Yisorah said, Goresh, Ha'ama, Azayis, Espino. Goresh, what's the term Goresh? Right? It's the same term as Gerushin, as divorce, right? Send away this maidservant and her child, because he's not going to get it. And Hashem said, listen to her. And Avraham Avinu sent away Yishmael. Did Yitzchak Avinu ever send away Esav? He didn't send away Esav. Never sent away Esav. In fact, if anything, he tried, and his intention was to make Esav first and foremost. So it didn't happen. It didn't work out that way. And Yitzchak reconciled with the fact that it didn't work out that way. But even after the fact, he didn't send him away. The Pasuk says, when Esav left, he left because there's not enough room for both of us here. So he goes. There's no confrontation. There's no severance. It's, look, you know, there ain't no room for the two of us in this town. So he moved away. Different than in the case of Yishmael. Which is why we see that Esav gets an inheritance in Eretz Yisrael, not in Eretz Yisrael, but in the land of the 10 nations that were promised to Avram. Yishmael gets nothing. That formally gets nothing, but the children of Lot, who Lot, by the way, was also not chased away, sent away, but left with exactly the same words as Esav, there's no room for both of us over here. You go to the left, I go to the right, you go to the right, I go to the left. So it was not a severance between Avram and Lot. Ammon and Moab got two portions of land of the 10 nations, and we're not supposed to take it away from them. We're told that's their Yerusha, that's their inheritance. Esav got a portion. He was not sent away. So Esav remains to some degree part of the picture. He can't be sent away completely. So therefore, the Ran, we'll add another point which he says, but for now, meanwhile, just in terms this kinds of in terms of this kind of thing, so we say, he says, "Shnei Ela Hayiladim to Oimei Tzviya LaResha Saisek Kolachad Bitim Shainim." Both of these children, Yaakov and Esav, they're both going to have strength in their own time. Esav is not out of the picture; he's very much in the picture. And in fact, to the extent that he's in the picture, to some degree, when he's really in the forefront of the picture, that pushes us, Yaakov, to the background. That's the way it is. There's a relationship between the Jewish people and Esav of Kishezekam Zenaifel. When this one rises, this one falls, as we will see more. They're both children of Yitzchak. The Ela told us Yitzchak. That's why the parsha begins with Ela told us Yitzchak. Aval ba'Avraham, writes the Ran, Einenu Kein. This is the Ran in the Drushas Haran Drush Hasheni. Avram, it's not the case. Yishmael is not going to be called, as Ve'ela told us, Avram, Yishmael. So that's why in the beginning of this parsha, where it starts talking about Ve'ela told us Yitzchak ben Avram, and it's going to go on to speak about both Yaakov and Esav, it says, backtracks for a second, and says, Avram hoilidus Yitzchak. Avram's told it was really only Yitzchak. Why? Because Yitzchak v'Yishmael lehushvei tel Avram le'Avram. Because Yitzchak and Yishmael had no parity, had no equality. Yitzchak was his jewel. Yitzchak was the one who would inherit the glory and everything of Avram Avinu. And in fact, he was sent away, Yishmael, to be removed. That was not the story with Yaakov and Esav. So that's what he explains. Avram hoilid es Yitzchak. But Yitzchak, Eila told us Yitzchak, both Yaakov and Esav. There's a difference between the two of them. This kind of an idea, in one way or another, is found in other Rishonim. There's a difference between the exclusion of Yishmael and the exclusion of Esav. And that's a beginning of an idea which we find here. And in truth, you know, just as a note, related to this, not here to discuss it at length, but there's a big discussion amongst in Rishonim v'Achronim, early Achronim, about the idea that the Golus of the Jewish people is divided up into four Golios, right? We speak about the Golus that we had at the hands of Bavel, the Golus that we had at the hands of Paras Umadai, Persian Golus, right? The story of Purim, the Golus of Yavan, which is the story of Hanukkah, the Greeks, and the Golus of Edom. And there are those who ask, what about the Golus of Yishmael? But Yishmael also, right, we know, exerts a force over us. And Rav Huttner explained, right, he has explained this seemingly within the Maharal, but he explained that it was a difference, because when it comes to the other Golios, their presence as a kingdom means our not. We go into Golos when they rise as a kingdom, and their kingdom ends when we rise. That's the way it works. There is this mutual exclusivity that exists between us. Yishmael is a sideshow. Yishmael, there's no rule that when the Jewish people are high, Yishmael can't exist, and there's no rule that for the Jewish people to come high that they have to destroy Yishmael. It doesn't say that. There isn't such a thing. Yishmael, to some degree, because they were sent away, they can continue in their peanut gallery. Before, after. It's not this kind of a thing. That kingdom has to be quashed in order for this other one to arise. It speaks to the same distinction which the Ran, generations later, is making. That Yishmael will exist, whatever it is, on the side. But Esav and Yaakov, they're so central together that, when one of them is there, the other one has to move to the side and so on and so forth. They're both central to the story. That's a note for opening. Now let's look a little bit more closely at this partnership between these two. Because the irony that's there in this idea, which is taught to us by the Ram, I'm sure you've already noticed, and it's bothering you as I say this over. On the one hand, we're saying, well, no, Yaakov and Esav, they're both there, they're both significant. But on the other hand, they are, to a great degree, mutually exclusive. When one rises, the other one falls. Can we speak about them as both being significant when they can't both coexist, when one pushes each other, pushes the other out of the way? Our parsha starts after Hashem responds to the tefillos of Yitzchak and Rivka conceives. The pasuk says, "Vayisreitzu abanim bekirba," and the children were running around inside of her, or they were pressuring and squeezing inside of her. She was having a very difficult pregnancy. She hadn't yet had an ultrasound, so she didn't know that she had twins. So what happens? So HaKadosh, she goes, Vatelech Lidresh is Hashem. She went to the Rabbeinu Shalom and to seek out Hashem, whatever, she went to Shem. She went someplace to get word from Hashem, and what does she hear? Shnei Goyim Bevitnech. There are two nations in your stomach. Now that probably would put on a lot of pressure, right? Two nations in your stomach. So in other words, it's twins, right? She was told. So Rabban just told it's twins. Twins, that's the way it is. Twins will be rumbling around like that. But more than that, she's told that these are shnei le'umim v'me'ayich yiparedu. There are two kingdoms that are ready from inside of you. They're going their separate ways. And they're struggling with one another. And the older one is going to serve the younger one. And as of course some of the Rishonim explain, that's why they're fighting so much. And that's why they'll always be fighting. Because if the younger one is going to serve the older one, they don't have to fight. It's understood, you know, that's like pecking order. He'll accept that. That the older one will serve the younger one. He's never going to accept that. He's never going to accept that. So there's always going to be a struggle. So she's told, don't worry. Nothing to worry about, all that pain you're having. First of all, you're having twins. And second of all, they're just going to fight for the rest of their lives, so they already decided to start now. So you can just relax. Right? You know, this is what Rivka heard. This was the interpretation. Now she went from Lama Ze Anochi being, you know, having all this struggle without understanding its meaning, she went to understanding its meaning, which helps a great deal. Which helps a great deal. She was told what it meant, why she was having these exceptional feelings during her pregnancy. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shekol Nidrei. They're both significant, but they're mutually exclusive. They're fighting each other. They're always going to be fighting each other. The Gemara in Megillah even says, as an expression of this idea, that they're always going to be fighting each other. That when one rises, the other one falls. They can't coexist. Says the Gemara that Rome was built on the ruins of Yerushalayim. It's almost as if the picture that is drawn almost is that they took the bricks from the demolition of one to build the other. Imagine a finite number of building materials, and it's either going to build Rome or it's going to build Jerusalem. That's how mutually exclusive these two are. What does it mean? How does it work? And of course, therefore, you know, it may necessitate that both of them have a place, but what is the nature of this place? So I'd like to give you a conceptual framework for this, which is an extension of a reading of a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, an important Gemara in Masechet Shabbos. Gemara Daf Kuf Mem Vav Amud Aleph in Masechet Shabbos. The Gemara on the bottom of the previous page speaks about the fact that from the time that Bon Nochash Al Chava, that's the expression the Gemara uses, from the time that the snake came upon Chava, whatever that means, he put into the human beings, he put into the human race zuama. He put into it a corruption, a pollution. And that's the results, the repercussions of the original sin, so to speak, of the eating from the Eitz Hadas. And that changed man fundamentally. And the Gemara has two versions of when and if that was to some degree cured. One version, a standard version, is that that was cured when we stood at Har Sinai. When we stood at Har Sinai, then, you know, all the ill became healed and everything else, and we returned to that purity, that immortality that was there in Gan Eden before the sin. Didn't last long, it lasted only till we did the Egel Azov, the golden calf. But the other opinion the Gemara says is that it took three generations of the Jewish people to get rid of it. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avram came along and didn't quite get rid of it. Why? How do you know? Because he had a child whose name was Yishmael. Why did he have a child whose name was Yishmael, who wasn't so good? Don't blame it on Hagar, says the Gemara. Don't say it's because he married this woman who he wasn't supposed to marry. No. It's because in Avraham there was some of that negativity that came into humankind from the Eitz Hadas. And therefore, he had a child Yishmael. He had a child Yitzchak. He was a righteous person, but he also had a child Yishmael. And says the Gemara, Yitzchak also wasn't cured. Why? Because Yitzchak had a child, Esav. Evidently, there was something in Yitzchak that was not yet quite cured. But Yaakov had 12 sons that were all remaining part of the Jewish people. Yaakov was mitasei shlema. His bed was complete. His family was complete. Everybody remained. Because when we got to Yaakov already, then he was cured. Then the sin, the impact of the snake, was no longer there. And there are many aspects to this. Yaakov Avinu is known as Emes, is known as truth. And we know that the impact of eating from the tree was the tree of knowledge of good and evil instead of truth and falsehood, as the Rambam explains. Yaakov Avinu was back to truth. Our Chazal tell us that on some level Yaakov Avinu lay meis. Yaakov Avinu didn't die. Yaakov had some degree of immortality. What was the sin's immediate impact was mortality, right? The day you eat from it, you become mortal, you will die. Yaakov Avinu was exempt from it. But the expression the Gemara says is because Yaakov Avinu, look, all of his children were part of the Jewish people. That's the sign that he had nothing which had to go off anyplace else. Okay, that's what the Gemara says. So Yaakov Avinu was perfect. I have a question. Yitzchak wasn't perfect, right? Because he had a child Yaakov, he had a child Esav. Was Yishmael perfect? Obviously he wasn't perfect. He's the reason why we say that Avram must have had some corruption in him, because Yishmael came out. Was Yishmael perfectly bad? Completely terrible? Well, there are a couple of indications that maybe he wasn't so perfectly terrible. One indication that he wasn't so terrible is that Chazal teach us that Yishmael did shuvah. Right? When it came time to bury Avram, who buried him? Yitzchak and Yishmael. Says Rashi, why? Yishmael let Yitzchak go first. He said, I defer to him. He was the chosen child. Yaakov, when it says they buried Yitzchak, it says Esav and Yaakov buried him. Esav didn't defer. Esav never did tshuva. Yishmael did tshuva. He did tshuva. There must be something to him, right? And Yishmael has all these spiritual things. Yishmael is Hashem will listen. Hashem will listen to Yishmael. Hashem listens to the voice of the child where he's there, lying there, dying in the bush. There's some positive things about Yishmael. There's no reason to say that Yishmael is completely terrible. And here's where we sort of take the Gemara and extend it, and I ask you to indulge me in thinking this way. Maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong, but to me it seems that it makes sense. Is that if Avraham Avinu had a child, Yitzchak, and Yitzchak wasn't perfectly good, because you see he had a child Esav, right? That's what the Gemara was on to say. He wasn't perfectly good, pure, perfect, pure. Only Yaakov was perfect, pure. So that means that he had two children. One of the children, Yitzchak, was extremely good, but not perfect. And one of the children was Yishmael. So he would be extremely bad, but not perfectly bad. Yeah, it's just not a clean break. But then Yitzchak, who's not perfect, has two children. One is Yaakov, one is Esav. And Yaakov was perfectly good. So what might that make Esav?
Not so good.
Not so good. Perfectly bad. Perfectly bad. If Yaakov is perfectly Emes, if when Yitzchak, who had in him a little bit of this and a little bit of that, or a lot of bit of this and a lot of bit of, and a little bit of that, right? When he came and his children, it split that Yaakov got kulayemus. So is it not perhaps possible that Esav got very much the opposite of kulayemus? Is that possible? Does the arithmetic work? I think it does. I think the arithmetic works. And I think that perhaps maybe that, therefore, we could start understanding that, you know, Esav's never described as having a spiritual bone in his body. Right? No prayer with Esav. The opposite. The name of Hashem, the name of God, is not on his lips. Esav is described with ultimate physicality. And Esav doesn't do tshuva.
the
the division, therefore, is
very sharp between these two. And so, really, the Ram himself and others explain the phenomena that we saw before of Shnei Goyim Bevitnech Ushnei Le'umim Me'achi Paredu, that Yaakov and Esav, from the very beginning, are opposed to each other. They're opposed to each other because their night and day, they're completely separate entities that can't mix. You know, somebody's very bad but has a little bit of good. And then there's another person who's very good but has a little bit of humanity, has a little bit of bad. Those two people have some point where they can meet. This person understands the dark side of the other person, and this person has some appreciation of the light side of the other one. There's a point of connection. The idea that with Yaakov and Esav they could never is because that point of connection didn't exist. I want to share with you something else again. I'm just emphasizing to understand the same thing, because understanding this Yaakov and Esav divide is very important just for our whole picture, not just of the first Aliyah of this parsha. Rashi quotes the Medrash, famous. Vayisrei tzu habanim bekirbu. Vayisrei tzu is a term for ritza, running. The children were running inside of her. What does that mean? They were doing laps. Says Rashi, say Chazal, Vayisrei tzu habanim bekirbu is that she would go for a walk, and she would walk down the street, and she would pass by a house of Avodah Zarah, and Esav would get up, whatever that means, and run. He wanted to get out. I have to go there. And then she would keep walking, and she would walk past the Beis Medrash, and Yaakov would get up and start running, so to speak, to try to get out. That's the picture. What's the problem with the picture? Some things, in general, might be hard to picture there, but the fundamental problem is, what's going on over here? From inside, from their womb, Esav is already an Eved Avodah Zarah, he's already an idol worshiper. Yaakov is already a tzaddik going to the Beis Medrash. Does that work that way? In fact, the Gemara talks about the fact that a person only gets a Yetzer Hara from when? From the time they come out. Yetzer Lev Adam Ra Mina Urav. The Yetzer Hara comes into the person Mina Urav from the time that he shakes himself loose of his mother. The Gemara even interestingly has it as a discussion between a grandchild of Esav and a grandchild of Yaakov. Antoninus, Marcus Aurelius, asked Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi this question. When does a child get a Yetzer Hara? From conception? Does Yetzer Hara begin at conception, or does it begin at birth? That was his question. Right? And they decided, however, that it starts from birth. What's going on over here? There's another Gemara. The Gemara says in Maseches Yuma, very interesting thing, it says there was a story about a woman who was on Yom Kippur, she was fasting, and she had a terrible craving. And the Gemara understands that to some degree those cravings aren't just her cravings. They're whoever's inside's cravings. So the Gemara says they went and they whispered into her ear. And they said, to whoever was listening in there, they said, and the cravings went away. And the Gemara said, that is b'terem etzarcho b'betin yedaticha. What the pasuk says by Yirmiyo Anavi, Hashem said, even before I conceived you, I had marked you, I had identified you. This child's going to be something special. And the Gemara says the child was something special, I think Rabbi Yochanan. And then there was another story about a woman who had this terrible, tremendous craving on Yom Kippur, and they whispered in her ear, and they said, it's Yom Kippur, and she had an even worse craving. And the Gemara said, that's what the pasuk means when it says Zayru Rishayim Me'rachem, that the Rishayim could already be prepared from the womb. And what came from it? What came from it was a fellow who was known as an Otzer Peri, a fellow who was practicing antitrust, whatever it's called. He was cornering the market during years when there wasn't a lot of produce, and he would price gouge and charge people like crazy. A very, very nasty person. That's what came from that. So what does the Gemara say? You see that it's already there in the beginning. I don't understand. Before there's free choice, how can a person be good? We say a person gets a yetzer tov when they're 13 years old, when they're bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah. Right, with some degree of maturity. Here, Yaakov Avinu, you know, this child, is the fetus on Yom Kippur, already when they were inside. Explains the Maral. The Ran also says that they both say it, each one in their own terminology. They say, of course, choices, to make choices and to choose and say, well, I have a drive and an interest in doing X or Y, as a Yetzer Hara, negative, or Yetzer Tov, positive, those start at different levels of development of a person. But there's something which is the core raw material of a person. Before choices are made, the core raw material of a person. Esav's core raw material, when it passed by a house of Avodah Zarah, it said, ah! Right? It connected. Right? It was cut from the same terrible cloth. That was what Esau was cut from. Choices, not choices. Would he have an ability to make choices later in his life? He might have an ability to have to make choices later in his life. But the raw material was just that. And Yaakov, you know, had a different raw material. His raw material was attracted to a base medrash. That was his nature. Bechira. No. When they're fighting in the womb, that's not bechira. That's not free choice. That's original condition. It's not free choice. Precedes free choice. Esav and Yaakov are like this. They're born. It's the split off between the great that is in Yitzchak and the other part of Yitzchak. The corruption part and the positive part. And Chazal showed this to us in many ways. I want to give you just one example.
I mean, it's two sides, it's two Chazalim, but it's two sides of the same example. There was a man named Adam HaRishon. We all have heard of him, right? So Adam HaRishon went through two phases, right? We have Adam HaRishon, at least two phases. We have Adam HaRishon before the Chet, and Adam HaRishon after the Chet, right? Adam HaRishon as he was created, pristine and pure and perfect. And we have Adam HaRishon after the sin, right? When he fell, like he fell and changed. Chazal tell us that Yaakov Avinu had a perfect resemblance to Adam HaRishon. The Adam HaRishon, HaRishon. The Adam HaRishon, the original Adam HaRishon before the Chet. The image of Yaakov Avinu was like the image of Adam HaRishon. Chazal tell us in the beginning of next week's Parsha that, you know, the Malachim were going up and going down. They were going up and going down. So what did they say? You know what happened? The Malachim were up there by Hashem. And Hashem rides this chariot that's described in Sefer Yecheskel. And one of the images on this chariot, whatever it means, is the demus of a person. Right? Adam. The demus of Adam. So they're up there. And then they go down the ladder, and they see this fellow sleeping, right, with his head on a rock. And they say, oh, boy, he looks familiar. One second. And they go back up. Wow, up and down. Wow, same person, right? Adam, Yaakov Avinu. The image looks the same. Yaakov was like Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon before the Chet's image. How about Esav? Who did he look like? Okay, we don't know who he looked like. It doesn't say who Esav looked like. But you know what it does say? In our Parsha, after Sheni, but everybody knows, that Esav had these special clothes. Right? Remember the special clothes that he kept with Rivka? That she dressed Yaakov Avinu in to go get the brachas. So, what were those clothes? Those were the clothes that Esav stole from Nimrod, right? Because Nimrod was a great hunter. Right? And that's how Esav became a great hunter. He had those clothes. And where did Nimrod get those clothes? Say, Chazal, Nimrod got those clothes from Adam HaRishon. Those were the clothes that Hashem made for Adam HaRishon. When did Hashem make clothes for Adam HaRishon? After Esav. So Yaakov and Esav split the inheritance of Adam HaRishon. Yaakov took what Adam HaRishon was before the sin, and Esav took what Adam HaRishon became after the sin. Yaakov took the purity, and Esav took what the Gemara calls the zuama, the pollution. That's a way, that's an elegant way that Chazal show us this great divide between these two opposites. One interested in one thing, one interested in another. Another step, same thing. Adam HaRishon had two children. One of them was Cain, and the other one was Hevel. Hevel died. He replaced, right? He was replaced by Shes 130 years later. But originally he had two children, Cain and Hevel. The Torah tells us about the birth of Cain and Hevel after the story of eating from the eighth of the tree of knowledge. And what does the Pasuk say? The Pasuk says, and Hevel was a Rayet Zayin, was a shepherd, and Cain was an Oved Adama, he worked the earth. One was a shepherd, one was a farmer. Right? Sort of classic division of labor before there were Jewish doctors and lawyers. There were shepherds and there were farmers. That's the way it was. What's the difference? What's the basis for the choice? Says Rashi, Hevel didn't want to be a farmer. Why? Because the earth was cursed as a result of the sin of Adam HaRishon. The earth was cursed. Arura ha'adama bavurecha. The earth was cursed. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. He didn't want to connect and to work and to get the earth under his fingernails. Because it was miskalala pirishla mi'avidasa. Hevel was removed from that. Kayim. The earth was cursed. I'm going to work it. That's my place. Cain chose to attach himself to the curse. Hevel chose to attach himself to the sheep. The sheep are completely, completely unaffected by the curse. You know, lions are affected by the curse. Right? Lions are wild animals. They're not deferential to people. Right? That's, again, that's part of the new world that the people aren't on the top. Sheep. Right? They go like sheep. Right? That's what they are. They're sheepish, right? They follow men. They domesticate animals. They accept the leadership, the mastery of people. Sheep is a shirayat sign. You know, that's still the perfect picture of a world the way it was and the way it should be. That was Hevel's world. That's the division. Same division. And we open up our parsha and we have Yaakov and Esav. And what do they do? Right? Yaakov. Esav was an ish yodea, sayid ish sadeh. He was a hunter, a man of the fields. What's that? He was a man of the fields. Okay, so there you have it, right? Like Cain was a man of the earth, and he was a hunter. A hunter works with animals that wild animals. Yaakov was a yoshev aholim. He dwelled in tents. Right, so we're used to Rashi, to even the Targum Onkelos, which says that he was sitting and learning, right? The tents of study and the tents of prayer. The simple pshat in the Pasuk says the Ibn Ezra, Yeshev v'holim means a shepherd. Shepherds live in tents, right? They don't build houses, they have to move from place to place, right? So that was what they were doing. The same division. Yaakov was detached from the cursed earth. He was living in the world of Adam HaRishon before. Esav was living in the world of Adam HaRishon after. He was living in the world of Adam HaRishon's clothes. He was the Eved Adam, he was the field man, he was the man of the hunting. Of that, it's like two different worlds. Two different worlds. But they both exist. and they both must exist. Yaakov doesn't chase away Esav. Yitzchak doesn't chase away Esav. Esav is part of the picture. Ve'elen told us Yitzchak and Avram. They will both exist. Because apparently, the same way we open up the Chumash and we begin reading the history of the universe, and there's Adam Rishon before the sin, and then there's Adam Rishon after the sin. And then there's the Avos, right, which get us back a little bit to Adam Rishon before the sin. And that's why Yaakov has these 12 wonderful Shvatim, but then these 12 wonderful Shvatim start fighting with each other. And we go down to Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim is again, right, Zuamas Mitzrayim. We have the pollution of Mitzrayim. Oh, and then we come out of Mitzrayim, and we're back with the giving of the Torah, and we're back like Adam Rishon before the sin, right? But then we go to the Egel, and we go fall back down again, right? Up and down, up and down. We don't even need Esav, in a sense. You know what I mean? But we don't even need Esav. In other words, we now, when we think about the idea of up and down, we say, okay, there was a period of time when Esav was very strong, and then Yaakov was sort of the humble one running around, bowing down to Esav. Then Yaakov becomes strong eventually, and Esav passes, and then Esav gets strong and destroys Yaakov, and destroys the Beis HaMikdash, and we wait for the day of Mashiach. But you know, even before Esav seemed to appear on the scene, what Esav seems to grab onto, what he seems to represent, which is the corruption of man, that side, and that up and down has always been there. That up and down has always been there. When one is strong, the other one is weak. When one is weak, the other one is strong. To understand the conflict between Yaakov and Esav, to understand the relationship between Yaakov and Esav, one has to understand, to some degree, this inherent opposition between the two worlds, between the world of the purity of Elohim, Asas, Adam, Yosho, man with purity, the way he was made by Hashem, and the distortion, that man can introduce into himself, that we did. And those are always at odds. It's la'ayim la'ayim yamatz. They're always struggling with one another. You can't have them both strong. You can't have that purity of Adam Rishon Kodam Achet at the same time as the corruption and pollution of Esav rears its ugly head. It's not. In the face of Yaakov, Esav just withers and disappears. But when Yaakov weakens, Esav thrives. Esav thrives. And to imagine that somehow they'll, you know, only one exists and not the other, no, they both exist. The irony is they both exist and they both can't coexist. They will both exist and they both can't coexist. Until the day of Olu Moshiim Bahar Tzion Lishpot Eshar Esav, the day of the Gula, which is described as the day that the Moshiim, that the Saviors will come up on Har Tzion to rule over the mountain of Esav and restore the Melucha, the kingdom, to Hashem, till that time, they have their land and we have our land, and we have this, I don't know what they call it, up and down, yin and yang, or whatever they call it, that makes it happen, that makes the two of them function together and inversely one with the other. There's a classic sefer of Jewish thought called the Chevis Halvavos. Chevis Halvavos Duties of the Heart, published in English. As well, Rabbeinu Bachya, Ibn Pekuda, was the author of it. And in the Shar HaPrishus, the section which he has on Prishus, the Chavis HaVavis says in a couple of different places, a couple of different ways, what is one of the great quotable quotes of the Chavis HaVavis, where he says that the more that the Medina, the more that the earth, the land, the society is physically built up, the more the seichel, the more the pure thought and intellect can be broken down. He describes an inverse relationship between physical development and spiritual development, between external development and internal development. People hear it sometimes and it rubs them the wrong way, right? Because we want to try to see how, you know, maybe everything can be together, everything can work together. You can have, apply the spirit as the content, as the heart and soul of the physical universe, but this is the way the Chavis HaLevavis said it, as sort of like as a stark contrast. He explained it, he used it, we discussed this in a different shiur recently, not in this forum, but a different one where, you know, he explains interestingly that, like, it's a novel approach. Mitzvahs hakluyos ba'aretz, that in Eretz Yisrael we have mitzvahs that don't apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. Right? So part of his understanding is that what happened was that Hashem says when you're going to get to Eretz Yisrael and you're going to be so involved in agriculture and building up of the land, you know, in Chutz La'aretz, right? So Jews are involved in building. Yeah, what do they build? They build the yeshivas, they build shuls, you know. In Eretz Yisrael, they build sewers, they build water systems, they build roads, they build highways, they build traffic lights, right? So he says, when you're going to be so involved in the physical world like that, so Hashem says, I better give you more mitzvahs. I better give you more mitzvahs. Because you're going to be so much more into the physical world, I have to give you more of the spirit, because otherwise the spirit just tends to shrink. It tends to shrink. And one hears in that characterization, which we know to a certain degree is true, where we bristle is because it makes it sound like it's exclusive. How can you have something build up physically and not spiritually? Why? Maybe you do them both at the same time. The way I would see the division is in drives. When a person is driven by physical ambition, so their spiritual ambition does suffer. And when a person is driven by spiritual ambition, so then their physical ambition takes the back seat. And internally in a person, that's very much true. That's very much true. And it's the same inverse relationship between Esav and Yaakov. Because that's what the two represent. That's what the two represent. The prolific strength in the realm of the physical of Esav versus the other in the realm of Yaakov. And while all of us are we're children of Yaakov, but you know, we have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. We have a mixture, some degree of it. But in Yaakov himself, it was so pure. And in Esav himself, it was so much the opposite that the two would not be able, indeed, to find any commonality, to be able to get together. Shezeh comes in Eifel. It's a beginning of a picture of what our world looks like. It's a beginning of a picture of what the internal challenges of a person are versus the challenges that we have within our world. It's all part of the same thing. It's the drive of the guf versus the drive of the neshama, the drive of physical development versus the drive of more spiritual, substantive development. Being able to somehow find commonality, points of connection between the two. Can we? Sometimes we can and sometimes we can't. In the world of Esav, we can't. In the world of Esav, we can't. In the world of Esav, there's such a mutual tension, mutual exclusivity. I can't tell you the practical ramifications of this. I think you think about it, you'll see practical ramifications, but the mabat, the perspective of, you know, it's not just choices within a menu here. The conflict of Yaakov and Esau was there before choices were ready to be made, before choices could be made. It was, as the Ran explained, as the Maharal explained, it was of their essential constitution, of what they were. Of what they were. To understand that dynamic, I think, is an important step for us in understanding the story of Yaakov and Esav and our own story. And our own story. As the children of Yaakov, you know, we have obviously the tools, and not only the tools, but the mandate to follow in his path, to try to attach ourselves to that part of the world of Hashem's creation that's not corrupted, that's not polluted by the sin, that's not the Adama Sheniskavala, that's not the cursed earth, but those aspects of life, those aspects of this world that are still pure like the sheep, that still reflect, you know, that which is right, the face of Adam Harishon, rather than the clothing of Adam Harishon. That's our portion of the Yerusha. We should be Zochah, we should merit to claim.